This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs this Thursday afternoon. It's very good to be with you. Unfortunately, what you're not going to hear, although we are trying to get her on the line, is the voice of Hlubie Mboyi, the lovely Hlubie Mboyi. Always adds personality to, yes, the dryness of me. She's over in Austria, skiing, working very hard over there. We'll see if we can get her into the conversation. But are you a future CEO? If you answer yes to that question, well, then this really is the show for you. So you're obviously someone that has their own business or has plans to start their own business, or perhaps you're in your career, you're moving along and you want to fast track that thing. If that fits you in any form or fashion, then you're a future CEO, and we're glad you're listening to the show. What's coming up in the show? We are going to be talking first how to build a pitch, a business pitch that actually gets attention. Then after the break, we're going to be hearing from a founder and CEO who has been dealing with luxury brands over the last 15 years of her life. So I mean, we're talking Bentley, Jimmy Choo, Gucci, these kinds of brands. She has represented them here in the country. Anyway, let's get into the conversation. We have some experts, and I sent an email to them yesterday just to, you know, get them into the feeling of the kind of conversation that we want to have here in the studio on Future CEOs. And I said, you're some of the best in the business. Guys, do you agree with that statement? Yes, no, are you the best in the business? Rob, let's start with you because you haven't been here before. Best in the business? And you nodded.
To the negative.
Okay.
No, I think early stage investing is an incredibly humbling experience. It's hard to be right all the time, and we hope that we do it better than most, but I wouldn't claim the best by any means.
Just very, very quickly, who are you and who do you represent? Because we're very grateful to have you guys on the show, and I'll brag if you don't about you guys.
Sure. I'm Chief Investment Officer at the Awaytu Project. The Awaytu Project is an SMME investment company that specializes in supporting early stage entrepreneurs, scaling their business. And our mission is to use entrepreneurship to create a fair country, a place that's socially and economically just, where everyone has an opportunity to express their full potential into the economy.
So brag a little, or confirm this brag. You're the biggest incubator in the country. Yes, 500 people that you are helping or assisting start their businesses and get them moving?
Across our various incubation programs, we have about a little over 550 entrepreneurs active right now.
Okay, so it's even more. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for being in studio. We really appreciate having you here, and your insights are going to be very informative as well, we know. Carmen, you're no stranger to the Future CEO show. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Do you want to just quickly tell all of those who haven't heard your voice before who you are and where you're from?
I'm from Lifeco Unlimited. We find, fund and support impact entrepreneurs, early stage impact entrepreneurs, co-founder and chief development officer.
Okay. You've been doing this for how long? We just want to make sure people understand the gravitas that we have here in the room.
18 years now.
18 years. Okay. 18 years working with entrepreneurs.
Hello.
Bonjour.
Hello. Future CEO.
Well, welcome to Future CEOs, Hlubie.
Listen, I can't talk for long. How's it going? The euros are going to ching ching. Hello, Future CEOs. Hello. Bonjour.
Just very, very quickly tell us, because you're actually interrupting us here, Hlubie.
What's going on? Who's there? What's the topic? Tell me. So tell me. Give me entrepreneurial spirit. Quickly, quickly.
Yeah, yes, yes. We're talking how to develop a pitch or put together a craft a pitch that is going to get you noticed and get you funding. That's the first half hour. The second half hour we don't have to bother with here at this point. How are things over in Austria? Yes, Austria?
I love the topic. Hello to my esteemed guests. I wish I was there. Not really. It's wonderful. I'm having a great time. I miss you. All the best, Future CEOs. The euros are chowing my money. But thank you so much for Clubmate for bringing me through. And I love you, Future CEOs, and have a great show, Gareth Armstrong.
Okay, we'll see you next week. Thanks for the call.
Have a great show. show. Have a great show.
All right. Thanks, Luby. Enjoy.
Bye.
All right, guys. That was the voice of Luby. Thank heaven she was part of the show for a moment. But let's get back where we were. We're talking how to build a pitch. Over to you guys. Where do we begin with this conversation? What's the first thing that we should be talking about as we consider crafting a pitch that actually gets heard and listened to? Come on, Carmen. You wanna go?
I think a good starting point is to put yourself in the shoes of the investor that you're wanting to speak to, because you then have an insight into what is it that they're wanting to hear. And in that way, that sets you on a path to prepare a conversation. Ultimately, it's about a conversation. So it's how do you ensure that you connect with each other? Is there a reason to continue talking? And a big part of that is really to listen carefully to what investors want, what are their asks, and then to make sure that you've got the information and you've done the preparation to meet those needs.
So you're calling it a conversation. Is that how what it is, Rob? I mean, the perception behind it is that we have to stand up in front of a group of people. We have to talk, I guess, to them in some form or fashion. That goes to the investigation side of it. But is it a conversation? Or is it just a more, it feels like a monologue, doesn't it?
It is a little bit, but I think Carmen makes an astute point, which is that it's really the first step in a process. So raising capital is a long process, actually, and it's an ongoing conversation. Okay. And you can think of, you know, if you ultimately want to embark on sort of dating and ultimately marrying an investor, you can think of the pitch as really sort of the pickup line, if that's, you know, a little bit informal, but that's a good way to think about it, which is
a good way.
You need to make a strong first impression, and to Carmen's point, something that, you know, leaves the door open for further conversation.
Okay, so I guess like any pickup line, the pitch will also be a nerve-wracking experience. How do we get rid of that? I mean, let's start there. How do you get rid of the nerves in a pitch? Who wants to go?
I see
I don't know in your eyes.
I don't know if you ever get rid of the nerves, because you're talking about something that you are passionate about, and you feel vulnerable because you've got to expose this idea, this potential concept that you're wanting someone to invest in. You're passionate about it. And you've got to be completely open to criticism, to questions. And that is what's so nerve-wracking. So I don't know if it ever goes away.
Mm.
I think preparation, and really thinking through what it is that you do, what is it that you're offering, and why are you doing it. That is going to stand you in good stead, I think.
Okay, so you're saying prepare in what way? I mean, how can you prepare to not have nerves? Again, we have to push this question.
So I think you can never be without anxiety. In fact, I would be nervous for an entrepreneur if they weren't nervous, actually, because it's a difficult thing.
Interesting.
To Carmen's point, entrepreneurship, putting your heart and soul and your passion into a product, you put a tremendous amount of your self-identity into that product.
And yeah, so it's very emotional, isn't it?
Very emotional. And so if you weren't nervous, I would be more anxious for you, because it's not a trivial matter.
Mm.
In terms of practice, it is just about practice. It's about reps. So literally practice what you're going to say.
Oh, really?
The cliche things of like in front of the mirror, in front of friends, in front of other investors. And that's another thing, is you can't attach too much weight to one individual pitch.
Mm.
There are many investors out there. There's many opportunities. And I don't want to extend the pickup line analogy too far in this conversation.
Sure.
But, you know, you probably need to talk to a few people before you get a date, and that's fine. And I think you get better through practice.
Yeah. Mm.
And there's no substitute for it. I can remember an experience back in 2013. We had an opportunity to pitch the then Minister of Finance, actually, who's back again as Minister of Finance. We had an opportunity to present how some of our work was going. National Treasury was one of our early stage funders,
mm-hmm.
Through the Jobs Fund platform. And we had 3 minutes, I think, in front of Minister Gordhan. And we probably practiced for a day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just a
in front of each
day.
Other, in front of teammates at the
over
office,
and over, and over,
over and over, in front of girlfriends, boyfriends, family, anyone who would listen. And you just do it again and again and again.
Is there a problem with practicing in front of people that maybe you have an emotional tie with, though? Is, I mean, your thoughts there? Yes, no?
You want a varied audience. So as long as you've got different perspectives, you should be fine. I mean, that's going to be the value to your pitch, because they'll see something and pick something up that you haven't considered. So the more people you speak to, the better for you.
Okay. So I guess then what we're just saying here is go out and pitch until you're not nervous anymore. But when you're in front of guys, be nervous enough to make sure that, Rob, you don't get nervous for them.
It's just like, sure, but it's just like, you know, any kind of sport, for example. An athlete is practicing day in, day out, after hour after hour. It doesn't mean they aren't nervous right before the tip-off of the big match that, you know, everyone's watching on TV. But there's enough confidence and muscle memory and proven ability through that practice that really when you just get into the game and get into the flow, you're going to be fine by virtue of that practice.
Carmen, what we haven't told anyone was that I was involved in a pitch session where you were the person that was hearing what I was sharing and saying. And I've mentioned it before off air, that it was a nerve-wracking experience, that it wasn't altogether fun. And that one of the difficulties was trying to, and I think you also have alluded to this, Rob, taking all that you have done, this massive emotional thing as well, and putting it down into a minute, 2 minutes. How do we do that? And maybe we can extend the question, who's the best person to be pitching? Because you've got this passion-filled founder, perhaps, but not all investors are looking for that passion. They may be looking for the numbers as well. Carmen, over to you.
Who's the best person to be pitching?
Yeah.
I think that's hard, because it sometimes depends on who you're pitching to. So
okay.
Then you'd put the best person forward for that. But really, you want to be able to, you need to come across as authentic. And you do want the other partner, the investor, to see your potential, your passion for what you're doing as well. But that you're able to harness that passion and all of that into a message that's concise and really gets them to go, oh, we should have a conversation.
We should continue more of a conversation.
And that's I think once you understand the purpose of a pitch, then it takes a little bit of the edge off, because you can't explain all of what you do in 2 minutes. It's not possible. However, you want to know that you've hit the right buttons so that you can have a deeper, more meaningful conversation. And often the trick about a really good pitch is when someone starts asking questions, because it means that they want to find out more. They're going a little deeper. Of course, if the questions are superficial, then you didn't do a good enough job. And I think that's what you want to look out for. There's no ideal person for the pitch. It really is about having the confidence, and that comes from the preparation and the rigorous critical thinking that you've done in advance of it. And ultimately, a pitch is it's a pressure cooker.
Okay.
It really is showing you, do you have the stuff? Do you have the metal to handle what else is going to come in your business? It gives the investor a great sense, because how do you cope with pressure? How do you deal with questions that come at you? How do you hold it together? Do you have the resolve, the resilience, and the resourcefulness to make this happen? Then surely you'll have some of that stuff for the tougher stuff that comes in making a business work.
Is that what you're measuring as well, Rob? Are you agreeing here? That really is a microcosm of what you can expect from that individual going forward.
I think so, to a degree. It's a great leading indicator of what's to follow in a much longer conversation and hopefully relationship one day. So the pitch is certainly a good place to draw an initial impression of an entrepreneur. But to Carmen's point, it's also not the definitive. You should think about an investment decision as comprising a variety of data points. Of which the pitch is just the first one. So if it's good enough to get through, you're going to start building the rest of those data points, and it's fine. But still, there's the pressure from it needing to be a good enough impression and data point to keep moving forward. To answer your original question, though, about who's best, I think it can be best summed up in who's best in practice.
Yeah.
Who's best in practice? Okay.
Right. So to our earlier point of how to prepare, it's to prepare through practice.
Who's getting responded to?
So if you're three co-founders and, you know, three partners, and you think having three people up there is too busy, everyone practice the pitch and do a blind rating, do a vote, see who's best in practice. Because, you know, there's truth in the saying that practice makes perfect. So I would put whoever's best up there with the fair point that Carmen made, which is for your audience, right? You're very visionary, charismatic founder might be ideal for a certain investor. And then you're very sort of technocratic, quantitatively oriented, you know, COO might be better
for... Yeah, the ops guy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So I guess what I'm going to do is summarize this part of our conversation as saying you need to understand the purpose of the pitch. And I think, Rob, you've described it as the pickup line. You're looking for that engagement, just that those one or two other questions that where you can add another data point or two, and then that really opens up the conversation. Are you guys happy with where we're at on when it comes to purpose? Then let's talk about, I just see nodding. So everyone, that's what that's what you're getting here in studio, and lots of nodding, which is great. Let's then move over into a pitch itself, the content there. What makes a really good pitch for either of you? And I want to just tell you a very quick story, an experience that I had, and this is probably why I asked the question as well. So I went to a pitching competition with an organization we won't mention, and there were a number of different businesses that were pitched. And the individual that won the money, it was 10,000 Rand that they would get, was very emotional, very emotive in the way that they positioned it. But they didn't answer very, very, very many business questions. And I didn't like that at all. I sat back and I thought, she's going to win, but she's going to win because she's emotionally manipulative, actually. Which is we often say manipulation is negative, but it wasn't. It was just her strategy. Thoughts. How do you like to hear that information coming at you, Rob? And Carmen, same question. Carmen, you want to go first?
Okay. I think we want to get a sense that the person is real, that they authentic. You want to get a sense of why is it that they want to do what they're doing. Have they done the work? So if we're to probe further, is this someone who's focused, glossed over the detail, or have they done the hard stuff in terms of asking the tough questions?
Qualification, right?
Yeah, what's not going to work? What are we worried about? What are we concerned about? They really have spent time talking about the threats to the business, which could include internal as well as external, whatever they are. But that's the kind of stuff that you really are assessing, is the depth and often your ability to just articulate very simply what it is that you do is a demonstration that there's a lot of depth that sits underneath it in the way that you've crafted that initial pitch.
Okay.
And that is important.
Rob?
Well, I think there's certain basics or table stakes in a pitch that, you know, if you Google how to do a pitch or look in any business school curriculum on how to present yourself for venture capitalists, there's going to be an idea of a certain hook, right, to get, you know, some analogy or some anecdote or some contrarian, you know, data point or something like that to hook the audience. Then there's going to be an articulation of the problem. You're going to probably try to land the solution, right? How you address that problem. You should probably comment on your own ability to execute on that solution. So the management team's credibility. Mm. And those are pretty basic, but it's, I'm surprised actually. I feel like we're reading off each other's notes here and preparing. So much of it is actually getting a read on the person. And I think that ties back to your point earlier about that anecdote from the pitch competition about someone being emotive and winning based on that emotion alone. The truth is that investing is a lot art and it's a lot science. Mm. And there can be a view that science should rule the day and decisions should be made purely on a scientific basis, the numbers, the quality of the solution, the credentials of the entrepreneurs, et cetera, et cetera. But the investor is also sitting there very much as a human with their own subjective views and emotions on what big problems are and how they should be solved. And so it is in part about delivering a scientifically compelling argument, but also reaching into that artistic side as well and pulling out the subjectivity. And that's, you know, on the day, different investment panel, that same story could have been dismissed outright by by five or six venture capitalists saying, she's light, it's all emotional, I'm not interested, next pitch. So it is hit or miss.
I'm a little worried that that you've just said that it's hit or miss, because I guess for me, if I want to be secure in the pitch that I'm developing, I want to be able to bring it down to just one or two points where you are saying to me, that's what you need to say. You need to mention that. Can we get there? So, I mean, we have spoken about the problem. We have spoken a little bit about the solution that you want. Perhaps there's a business model element there as well. What is, in your experience of the, I mean, you guys have obviously, I think, Rob, you guys have worked through 60,000 applications to get down to your 500 or so. Is that right?
Accurate? Historically, we've been over 100,000 applications now for about 1,000 entrepreneurs that we've worked with. So,
okay. Well, and so 100,000, there must be something that stands out to you. Carmen, you as well, you've many, many pitches. What stands out with an individual that stands in front of you? Just personal preference.
You want to read intention. You want to get a sense of why is it that you're doing this, and why is it so important? And have you thought through what the possible answers to that question would be?
Okay.
That's the thing. You've got a human being standing in front of you, and they're talking about an idea or maybe something that's up and running already. But we know at the end of the day, it's that individual that is going to drive and make that idea work. And you want to know that as you engage with this person, that they've got the stuff, that despite what comes, they're going to make it happen. Because this is the thing, they might be fixed on what it is they want to achieve, their vision. But the reality is in business is that you've got to be flexible, and that strategy is going to change. So are you encountering a human being that is fixed on that vision but has the ability to learn and grow so that they can do what needs to be done in order to get there? And that's hard. That's not from one pitch. It's a series. But are they saying the stuff in terms of, this is important to me, this is why I think it's important, and this is what I think the possible strategy is for it? And that changes. Some people are brilliant with the plan, but you're questioning, oh, I don't know if they're doing it for the right reason. They've got the perfect, technically strong pitch, but something's missing. It's like you've got the soul part that's missing, and others are all soul and not enough meat. So,
I hear you. I think there has to be a balance, Rob.
There is also a potential risk in thinking that there's a perfect pitch or a perfect answer, because that sort of assumes that capital is agnostic, right? Or that money is just money. But the truth is that the investor is a company as well, has its own values, has its own mandate, is trying to achieve something specific through the investments that it makes, typically. And oftentimes that's more than just a financial return. So it's not just pure rands and cents. It's a values driven conversation. And so to think that you're going to create the perfect pitch, to your point, have one or two or three specific technical points that you make that are going to resonate to every investor is just not true, because investors are people on the other side of it. So I think that's important to take note of.
No, thank you. Thank you for your input there. I guess this little section of the conversation, I'm going to just pull down to preparation. You need to know who's on the other side of the table. It's as easy as that. So what have we said? What's the purpose of the pitch? And it's really to hook some attention. The second point, prepare, know who you're talking to. We're running out of time here. Let's quickly talk to those individuals who have sat in front of perhaps you guys or others, and their pitches haven't worked. There's an emotional thing that perhaps happens there. Maybe they think their business is a failure. What do you say to them? And maybe just a 30-second comment from each of you before we have to wrap up. Rob, what do you say to that person?
So I think, you know, just like dating, not everyone's a perfect match. So just because the pickup line didn't work doesn't mean there isn't someone out there for you. And so there's a degree of continuing to try. We offer various entry levels for entrepreneurial opportunity, down to our micro incubator that offers, you don't even need to have an idea yet. You can come ideate, work on your traction, towards investment. So for us, there's remedial training and opportunity to enter lower capacity tracks that can help you upskill and get your idea moving with serious traction before we invest larger amounts of capital. So we like to keep barriers to entry as low as possible, and there's always an opportunity to keep working and recycling through the early stages of our system.
Mm, no, thank you. Carmen, what do you say?
Every failed pitch is an opportunity to get better. So, and this is from experience. So to listen to all the objections, the questions, the concerns from the panel, and use that as your as a valuable tool to get better the next time around, because they've seen something you haven't seen. That's the thing about entrepreneurship, really, is your ability to learn from setbacks and to get better as a result. That is ultimately what it's about.
So I guess what I'm hearing here is that we must fail during a pitching session at some point, and it's valuable to do it. And we'll just coin the phrase from Silicon Valley and other people: fail and fail fast, move on to the next pitch, find the next person to hit on, if we're going to use that. Guys, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I've enjoyed the fact that there isn't, as you've said, Rob, one or two or three definitive things that we can say or do that will guarantee us something. It seems like it's a bit of a moving target, and all of those who are listening, I can tell you now, they appreciate that, because now they know that they don't have to hold themselves up to this perfect thing, this ideal that often we think we all have to do. Guys, thank you very much. Very, very quickly, how do people make contact with you and Aware2 Project, Rob?
Sure, you can check us out online, aware2project.co.za, also Facebook, okay. Twitter as well.
Fantastic. And then Carmen?
At lcu-sa.com, and Facebook and Twitter as well.
Thank you to both of you for your insights. I certainly have enjoyed the conversation. Guys, up next, we are going to be talking to a CEO who has, for the last 15 years, been dealing with luxury brands here in South Africa. We will see you after this.
This is CliffCentral.com.
When it comes to foreign investment, what is and what isn't allowed? What happens to your overseas money when you die? With the changes regarding overseas funds and how SARS treats you if you're a South African taxpayer, St. James Global has the answers for you. They've been doing this for years and focus on preserving and protecting offshore wealth, as well as creating succession planning structures. Make sure your worldwide assets pass on into the future. Go to stjamesglobal.com for more information. That's stjamesglobal.com. Your independent wealth managers.
St. James Global is an authorized financial services provider.
This is CliffCentral.com.